Hello, and welcome to Soul-Led Living, a podcast dedicated to helping you live your soul's true path so you can create the dream life you know you are meant to live. I'm Nikki Novo, your spiritual mentor, a fiery Latina, mom of three, and an advocate for living soul-led. You're here because you're meant to be here. So let's do this. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Soul-Led Living, the podcast. I'm so excited to be here with you, with a friend of mine who has been super important in my business for many years, but also the person that is making me crack up as I'm trying to introduce. We're talking normal, and then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna hit record and watch. My voice is going to change, and like, sure enough, my voice changes. I have like a radio voice, guys. For you. So, you know, I hope you appreciate this voice. But anyways, I want to introduce to you Megan Williams, owner and founder of the self-publishing agency. Her company has published my last two books, The Final Swipe and Soul-Led Living. And those books just like would not be possible without her. So I really want to share her as a resource and her company as a resource. And we're going to talk all things writing, self-publishing, and all of that. So welcome to the show, Megan.
Hey, Nikki, good to see you. This is the dream scenario, because since you did The Final Swipe, I remember exactly where I was when we had our first conversation about your book, and then where we were when I had to say, your book's live on Amazon, like, have good luck. And I remember being like, I'm going to really miss talking to her. So I'm so happy to have this time with you and to be able to talk everything that we now have scheduled time for.
And I just feel like we've both been through so much transformation since like the first time we met, which has been really cool. Cause like when I was writing The Final Swipe, I had just had my last child, Ethan, and you were still no kids. And then I think after that, had child, and then like started getting into more of my spiritual stuff. So it's been a really cool experience, like knowing each other and for so long.
Yeah. And because I remember you're like, I've written this book, The Final Swipe. I've written it with, I am like currently have a baby on my lap napping. And I would have been, I mean, our business was quite, it was still in its infancy, really.
Yes.
And I had not yet had a baby. I had my stepdaughter that was sort of in and out of the house all of the time. And now we have a baby. And we've got Madison in our lives every day. So, and the business is like one that I may or may not need to stop working till midnight sometimes. So Anyhow, and then I also bought one of your courses during COVID, when I'm sure your business also popped off because everyone is looking to not only explore what on earth is happening, but also having the space to kind of root into things that they probably were feeling in themselves, but not sure to how to harness it. And still to this day, your course is extraordinarily helpful. And I still have this like unharnessed psychicness in me that I'm like, I don't know what to do with this.
So. Oh, well, we're going to work on that, Megan, for sure. We turn baby psychics into real psychics. So yes, we're in the right place.
That's a really nice phrase. Little baby psychics like me.
So Megan, tell me, I know a little bit about the story about why you started a self-publishing agency. Just so you guys know, self-published. So my last two books were self-published, meaning no traditional publishing deal. It's kind of like an entrepreneurial version of putting your book out there. Thanks to Amazon, you could put your book up. Like I could write a book today and put it up tomorrow if I wanted to via Amazon. It's not even the technical part that's complicated, but it's like keeping yourself accountable. You feel like a crazy person when you're writing a book. So like having support, deadlines. There's so much. This last book, Soul-Led Living, I'm pretty sure I actually invested like $10,000 in it, which I didn't do that much with The Final Swipe because, well, first of all, I didn't have that kind of money to invest at the time. And I wrote it in a much shorter amount of time, but it is like a whole production. And I think you could, of course, do it with no money and like just put up whatever you want, which I've definitely done before. We won't talk about that book, but there was a book before The Final
Swipe. I do
remember
that. Yeah.
But, you know, of course, the more you get into your brand, the more you want it to like look more professional. So I think that's been the trajectory. But tell me a little bit about kind of like what got you into self-publishing and what the company does today.
I mean, you're right to observe that because there's an entire spectrum. So when I got into self-publishing, it was as a result of lots of businesses. You start a business that you wish you had the chance to like work with. So I had written a memoir, and in a year after I'd written it, I was trying to figure out how I wanted to publish it. And because the only thing I had in my brain was the Carrie Bradshaw life that the movies have profiled for us, that you get $3 million, you go and live by a lakeside cottage, and you become a professional writer. Like, that's
the dream.
I'm like, that's what's going to happen. I have the manuscript, and that's like, and that's what's going to happen for me. And that profile of it, or that experience, is actually just done for the movies, because they have to very quickly identify this person is an author, and this is why they have all of this time for lunch. And this is why they are very available and have a free schedule. It's like the same thing as when you can't explain what somebody does in the movies, you make them an architect. So you just like, oh, they're busy. But
with, accurate.
We don't really want to get into this person's job, so we're just going to call them an author or an architect. Great. For me, what I was missing was that I was working in communications. I knew how media worked. And I also just had a following that was like, ready, I felt was ready to hear the book that I had written. And this is like early days of Blogger, before Instagram, etc. But I wanted to get this book out on my own terms. I tried to do that. Like, I approached publishers, approached agents, and I got a lot of favorable answers. Like, it was a really, like, I knew I'd written a good book because I had hired people around me to help me write a good book. I'd done the drafting, and then I'd hired editors, et cetera. And so the answers from publishing houses were really confidence boosting. However, it was always kind of like felt with a little bit of an asterisk. We're interested in this, but we don't see space for it on our calendar right now. Or we're interested in this, but we don't know if we can help market it or we can sell it. So
why do you think they say that? Is that like because maybe you'll get bigger one day and you come back to them? Like, are they trying to just like not close the door? Or like, I wonder why those responses.
I think it's because, so I can give you a very specific example. I had released my book, decided to self-publish it, and it had done so well. And then I got an email one day from a very, like, the most senior editor at HarperCollins asking if I would be interested in signing with them. And so we had a 1 week love affair where basically I fell in love so hard, asked them if they wanted to move in with me, and was basically like, I love you so much.
So you had a lesbian love affair, because that's,
yes,
like, you know,
love you
my
so
lesbian
much.
Friends, that's what they say you do. Like, you just like, yeah, move in right away.
Yeah. And please, please, please never leave me. And then they basically dumped me on a Friday and said, I've taken it to the board, like the acquisitions team. And they believe that you might have hit your peak in terms of sales. And they don't think that they're going to be able to sell it more. Like, the audiences are tapped. That book went on to, like, I think we sold like, within that year, probably 3,000 more copies. Like, it was just kept going. And they had been wrong. But they're guessing, right? And I have since, like, I'm still in touch with that editor. I've met her, I've, like, hung out with her at conferences and stuff. And she told me in our last visit, she's like, I went to bat for that book 7 different times to the table. And they were like, they couldn't figure it out. They couldn't figure out where and when and how it worked. Not necessarily for me, but for them. Because they know what their publishing calendar looks like for kind of 3 to 4 years out. And my book, there might have been too many books like mine, or it would have required more marketing than they had budget for. So while it felt intensely personal to be dumped on a Friday, the actual, like, now that I've been in the industry for, you know, 7 more years than this, now I recognize, now that I talk to publishers, it actually isn't an insult to the author. If they are telling you they cannot market your book, you do not want them to publish your book, because it means that you're going to be attached to this company that will not be able to help you sell books. So being dumped ends up being a favor most of the time. Probably you see this in your line of work and as in publishing. The rejection is very often not about the author, more about whether or not it's a fit for the actual house, because sometimes people can get a publishing offer or like think that somebody's interested. And then you realize, you go and look at how they market other authors and you're like, oh, they're a team of 3. Like, they don't have the capacity to market anybody. I don't want them to sell my book. So they can be really good looking and feel like they check all of the relationship boxes. And then you look at like how they actually treat you in the relationship. You're like, no, 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 no. this isn't going to work.
Yeah. So then once you released, I don't think I knew this, that you released a memoir, and then you kind of just felt like there was a market to help people write these kind of books.
I didn't like pursue the publishing part because I was not somebody who just wanted one day, no matter what, I wanted to become an author. For me, this book was a legacy piece. It was a legacy memoir for my partner who'd passed away. And I ultimately just wanted to write this book so he would live on bookshelves and in lives of other people for the rest of time. That was like, it was a really altruistic plan that went really well. And then I got, but what happens is when something does do really well, as you've experienced, is that now all of a sudden people start being, can I pick your brain for coffee? Do you mind if I like, could we hop on a quick call? I'd love to hear more about how you did that or what have you. And that was starting to happen for me often. And the more attention that that book got, then I was in another relationship, now my husband, and his daughter and I wrote children's books together. And I wanted to see if I could replicate the same kind of success by building a team of professionals around you and then releasing the book. Once those books did really well, that's when the invites to, hey, could you run some workshops? Hey, we were wondering if you could come speak at this conference. And then finally, someone in finance said, you might want to start putting a business model together on all the coffees that you're having and all those free conferences that you're speaking at. So
my girlfriend used to do that for something else. I forget. She owns like a large like women networking industry. And one day her husband shows up at home and he gives her a little like Stripe kind of machine that like is mobile that you could like plug into your phone, and some, like, you've probably seen it when people go to like markets or whatever and they could run your credit card. And like, kidding but not kidding, he gave it to her and he was like, the next time you go on a coffee meeting, you're going to plug this into your phone and you're going to run their credit card, because he said that she was like giving out all this free information with all these coffee dates. So like, as a joke, he's like, and you're going to take this little machine with you and you're going to run their card.
Yeah, that's perfect. And you know, I was really nervous to do it because of course, like, who am I to, I feel like I was piecing the whole thing together. So who am I to be able to like charge people for this, you know, my input? But then I realized that like, who wasn't I guess. And then ultimately you just need the first person to buy a service from you or buy your input. And you're like, actually, I think I can do this. I think based on how they are responding to what I've said, I just told you a whole bunch of things that you didn't know that felt really obvious to me. So
of course,
that was all about that. Like, I started off for 6 months off the side of my desk with like a very baby Instagram account and a very baby website and very baby prices. And that was 8 years ago. And like,
I was a beneficiary of some of those baby prices when I first started, which was, that was a good time. It was a good time.
Yeah. And you've also been very, in all of those baby steps and your input, because you were far more proficient in running a business at the time than I was. You always had really good feedback. You're like, you might want to try this, or maybe next time. I wasn't, you know, it was really useful. So like 8 years in the business now, and it's just so fun because we get to meet so many different people. And I know the spectrum of self-publishing is quite large. And as you said, some people decide like, I can write a book, throw it up on Amazon, and voila, technically I'm an author. Yeah. However, as we know that like, quality always sells. The greatest compliment that authors can get is like, I loved your book. And the only way somebody's going to say, I loved your book, is if it's professionally published.
For me, like the first time that I wrote that scary book, the first book that I wrote, I mean, I'm grateful I did because I learned so much. I put it all up by myself and all that kind of stuff and had it all done. Even threw myself a little book signing, like a book launch party, and people showed up. My friends are so kind. They're still showing up to my book party. So I'm really grateful to those friends. But I would say like, even the first time I wrote, I think part of the reason why I didn't put support around myself is because I was like embarrassed. I didn't trust my gift. I didn't want somebody, I don't think I had like the self-esteem to receive edits and critiques, honestly. And I think that that's what was keeping me from editors and that kind of stuff. So it kind of, what it looks like at first is like, I know what I'm doing. Like, I don't need anybody's opinions, but it's really just kind of covering up this feeling of like, I'm so scared that you're going to tell me that this is shitty and that this is never going to happen for me. And I can't handle that. So I'm just going to put out this like mediocre work. And then after that, when you get when it feels so shitty after you publish it, because it's such a bad product, that's when I was like, okay, this second time around, like, I need to be a big girl and receive critiques and criticism and help and support. And I feel like in Soul Led Living, I did that. I took that to like a whole other level as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that as a writer, the more you can get to a place where you're not going to break, that you're not glass, the better the book could get, because nobody's book is a first draft. Like every book that you read that you're like, wow, this book was amazing, it was really worked on. I don't think I understood that in the beginning. And I think I'm still learning that as a writer. So that's why what's cool about your business is you have so many different resources. You have editors and even people that put up the books, like putting up your book on KDP, right? That's what it's called, the Amazon site, is easy, but not easy. Like there's actually like techniques. Like I didn't know. One thing that was super cool was that when I did the book with you, you were like, oh, there's these techniques to try to get like a best, like to be like the bestseller in that day, like the first time you release your book. And, you know, you guys put it up and it was like magic. And I got like little bestseller, like a sticker on the day that I released the book.
Yeah,
and
I was so more excited than my about book that. Ever did.
So. Yeah. And I was just like, this is such a big deal. And it was really, there was things that it wasn't because, oh my gosh, I'm so popular, people buying my book, but there's like techniques to actually get that. And that was like,
note to the listener, it is because Nikki is that popular and everybody loved it. Thank you.
But also, Megan, techniques. So I have a question for you. Since you've worked with so many authors, what is a sign that you're ready for a book? And maybe if you're not ready for a book, what are some things, but you want to write a book, right? Like, what are some things that can help me get ready to write a book?
So signs that I think you're ready are when an author just is walking around with this idea that they're like, I can't. This idea finds me every day. It feels like it's this thing that I want to be doing. I haven't figured out how I'm going to do it, but it's part of your like daily dream, not a daydream, but it's just like the daily thing that you walk around with. And then you might forget about it, but then you're like, ah, oh, maybe one day I'll write a book. If it's in you, then that feeling's not going to leave you, and there's not going to be a better time. So I think those are the kind of that's when the timing is right for you.
Yeah, it's kind of like getting pregnant, like almost like you'd feel the soul of like the baby book that's like trying to come through, and it keeps kind of visiting you. So that's a good idea.
And then it's like when you buy a new car and all of a sudden you see that car everywhere, or you're like looking at a new sweater that you think you really want, and then all of a sudden you're like, does everybody have the sweater? Do I need the sweater? So it's going to be the same with the book. All of a sudden you're like, is everybody writing books? Is TikTok listening to me? Probably. But like, what?
Yes.
But like, why am I getting all this book stuff coming into my ether? For people who have a book on their bucket list, but actually don't know what they want to say yet, then that is where either we can help them, because a lot of times it might be that they have to just kind of dial in, like, are they telling a memoir, or are they like, what are they offering? Because ultimately the experience of writing a book is intensely personal to the author, but the reason you have to write a book is so a reader can enjoy it.
Yes. Oh
my
gosh.
Because writing a book for ourselves is like, cool, right? Just write it. Put it on a Word start, document
or start a Substack or like something, like start a Substack. Because I think, yes, like for sure you have to get, and I had many years of like writing because I needed to write. And I was grateful that I had a blog at the time and I was able to do that. So I think that's an important part of the process. Like if you are just like writing for yourself for a while, do that. And then ultimately you kind of switch over to like writing in service and like making sure that this story is helping the other person. People send me their writing that feel like an unprocessed journaling. And, you know, and it's like, we need to kind of, I always say like when you're writing, especially when you're writing your own stories, you have to know the gold from that story. Like you can't just tell the story without understanding what the gold is, meaning like what you took out of it, how it would support another person. And you're really just using the story to the same way, like, you know, Jesus used parables or whatever. The idea is that you're using the story to kind of teach some sort of, you know, lesson or whatever it is that you want to get across, but that you're also aware of the gold within that story. If not, it does feel like a little bit of a unprocessed, like a journal that like you haven't processed what has happened or the emotions.
Have you seen that kind of writing? Yeah, we've seen it. And those are the authors that spent like, ultimately they probably get the most squeeze or the most juice out of the squeeze when we work with them, because they really have like the long walk between what their manuscript had been all the way through to becoming published, because we'd be a little bit more in the four seasons of publishing category, less the like can't like the camper van. So are the amenities are really high, the service is really high, but also we're ensuring that when you leave us, that you are really thrilled about not only your experience, but you are also, when people compliment you on your book, you know it's because you like had the team of the best. You had everybody on your team trying to make this story the best version of itself possible. And going back to what you had been saying about that first book and how you're like, maybe I don't want anybody to like tell me that this book isn't any good. So thank you, friends, for showing up, but let's not talk about it publicly. Yes. Just in case. And if it becomes a bestseller with nobody looking at it, then that's fine. But part of what we find is that when we cut corners, whether it's spiritually cutting corners or we cut corners in our careers or family, ourselves, and especially with our books, when you cut corners, you're like, oh, I don't think, maybe I'll just do that part myself, or maybe I won't do that one round of edits that I need. What happens is it actually impacts how you feel about the book at the end.
Yes.
Whereas, what you just shared was a perfect example of somebody who, if you weren't ready and you didn't like line up your team of like professionals who are better at their job than you are, then it actually won't do well in the market, because you're kind of scared. You don't want to like, you actually don't want to even talk about your book. Yeah. So for the authors that have that journal-y type thing, they might not be ready because they're just talking about themselves and they have forgotten that like there is gold in their story. I'm sure of it. They just might have to not, the goal has to shift to be like, this book has to be in service, and this book has to, why would a reader be interested in what I have to say? Not why am I as an author interesting? It's a slight distinction, but there has to be a clear understanding of like, why will your reader benefit from your book? And that can exist in fiction too. Like obviously we're talking a lot more about personal memoir stories, but in fiction, again, the story has to be like, does this book entertain people? Does this book make people excited to like go back to bed and read more?
Right. Or reflect or whatever it may be. But yeah, but there exactly. has to be a purpose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because otherwise, as you said, so it is all possible. But when I think the writers who are not quite ready are the ones who are just writing purely for themselves, as you said, and need a little bit of either life experience or just a team to help tell them what the gold is. So.
Okay. What do you think makes a good book? I mean, I know that's probably such a hard question, but anything that you've noticed, like from some of the books that you've published, anything that you feel like what makes a good book?
I read all genres for obvious reasons, but the books, so I don't even have to like a book or I don't have to like a genre to know if a book is good. And what we've identified is what makes a book good is that it has to keep moving. Like in terms of, I don't want to get bogged down in characters or details that actually don't serve the story. And the other thing is visually, I want the story to be tight. I don't want to have a bunch of metaphors that sound like that are a bit lightweight. I don't want the book to say things like raining cats and dogs, because that feels sloppy and amateur writing. So books that, even if I don't like the genre, if they're tightly edited and they keep the story moving and my eyes aren't snagging on grammatical issues, or even interior designs of books really matter, because if my eyes turn the page and I just see walls of text, I'm like, oh God, like, I don't want to read this. Like to quote Nate Bargatze, the comedian, I'm like, let me get my head above water for a minute. Give me a space. Give me a paragraph break so I can just take a breath and like regain my like focus. So like,
yeah, interior every book design is like a home you're walking into. It's like a home that you're walking into, and that like it could either be set up nicely for you or not, even just by the visuals. That's so interesting.
Yeah. And well, we all know what it's like to have books on our nightstand that look like so big that you're like, oh, I think I might just pick up Colleen Hoover tonight. Like, I don't really want to do that one again. Like, and so we have books that just visually we dodge because it looks like a lot. And so our job as an agency and our job as authors is to ensure that when we are bringing a book into the world, that we are always thinking about the reader's experience. And if we're not, the book will not sell. Or the book will not get those, like, I love this. This changed how I thought about this. Like, the greatest compliment to an author is that somebody completed your book.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. Yes. Still Led Living got a lot of that. And I was like, what? Oh my gosh. Yes. Like,
you finished it? You didn't just buy it to support me?
Yes. Or because the cover was pretty. But yeah, no. That's a big deal. So Megan, what is the process to self-publish? Like, can you share the stages?
Authors can come to us at any stage of their process. So some are coming with just the idea. And then when they come to us with just the idea, then we build out a writing plan for them and deadlines, timelines, et cetera, and kind of help with that flow. If they come to us with a finished manuscript that's either been edited by somebody not on our team, or they come to us with a manuscript that needs editing, then we put them kind of we start building out the editing plan, we build out designing, like adding a designer to the team, book marketing, how to like start building readership very early on. Because as you know, when people are paying attention early in your book process, they're likely to pay attention all the way to the end and purchase your book and become a fan and become a supporter. So with TSPA, we ultimately take what an author arrives with. In some cases, like yourself, you had an editor and a designer already on your team, so you didn't need to hire TSPA for those things. But we ultimately want to add to your team with what you need and what is going to make this book sort of launch successfully. So in a full service way, we're like, come stay at the all-inclusive Four Seasons. We're going to project manage and help you market this book. We're going to help you launch and be available in bookstores and media, et cetera. And then if you need an editor, we can add that editor in. If you need a designer, we can add that designer in. Or if you need print books, we're going to go and find the best print stuff for you. So we operate like a full publishing house that we have seen in the movies, except everybody just works from their home offices and there's no New York skyscrapers, so not as sexy. And
you're not sharing, you don't share any sort of royalties or anything like that.
No, good question. Yeah. So no, we are one of the only agencies that of our size that we know of, at least, that doesn't take any royalties from authors. We believe we know we're at a premium price, but it's a bit of a white glove, very individual process for people. But we also believe that if an author is coming to us, whether that's as a business investment, because they're running a business and having a book will put them on like in conference rooms and make them the smartest people in the room. They're coming to us as a business investment, but we also believe that if you're investing in your story, that we shouldn't be the ones to also profit off of that investment in 5 years from now. Because if like when Nikki gets to go and speak at Southwest by Southwest about, literally any of the many things you could speak about, and you sell 10,000 books off of that, we don't believe that we should be tied to that, because that is your doing. That is your success that you need to profit from.
Yeah, that's the thing about self-publishing too. And so I have only self-published, guys. I have never done a traditional publishing. I'm not against it. I'm open to it. It's just that there's been a few reasons why I self-published. Number one, a bit of controlling, and I don't want anybody to like tell me how to change my story. So that's part of it for sure. Another thing is that when the book ideas come to me, they feel like they need to come out sooner than later. So that's the hard, like when the final swipe came to me, it was like, oh my gosh, this needs to be out in 4 months. And I think it was like the final swipe was, it's a small book and it was very quick. Soul Led Living took about a year from me starting to write it to actually getting it out. But when you do a traditional publishing deal, I have friends that are waiting 2 years, 2.5 years to 2.5 years to get the book out. And for me as an entrepreneur, that's very hard, because I'm kind of a body of work kind of girl that I know that the reason I have my own business is because I like the freedom of being like, oh, these 3 years I was really into dating and I wrote a lot about dating and I talked about dating, but then I moved into intuition work and that was really fun. But now I'm like switching into whatever is next. And when you are waiting that long for a book to come out, like you're tied to that topic for like 5 or 6 years. That's been hard for me to wrap my mind around. And then of course, like, you know, if you're good at selling books, I think soul-led living makes about $9 a book. So, you know, it could be a decent product if you want it to. If you're publishing with a publishing house, you're probably making like what, like $1.50 or something a book? I'm not sure.
Yeah. And they might, and the advance is not the millions of dollars. The profit to be, what you just said is so valuable about the body of work piece, because you're tied to the subject until your book is released with a traditional publisher. And then you're tied to it until your next best thing. Elizabeth Gilbert is somebody who's a great example of that. She came to speak in Vancouver a year ago and, you know, she sold out. It was a great room. Everybody wanted her to talk about Big Magic. Like, what's your next thing? Like, talk about it. Like, let's go. And she was in the throes of what we understood as like, you know, she's dealing with a lot personally. And she's moved on to fiction titles and she's changed course. But she's attached to that, like, no, tell us about creativity. Inspire us. And she's like, no, I'm not in the mood. And you're like, that was 5 years ago, guys. And you're like, no.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's probably like being like James Taylor, play You Got a Friend. And he's like, no, I have a new album.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that that is accurate. You know, that's hard. That's the hard thing about being an artist and like kind of hitting your, you know, your big album and people wanting like that song over and over again. So I think you have to think about that when you're kind of so far out committed to the body of work.
And as you said, especially if you love the, as you said, the full picture. So whether that's for your full business or as a writer, you also love the idea of talking about your book all of the time, then self-publishing is probably one of the most viable and like successful routes you can take, because if you love talking about your book all of the time, you are going to be the best person to sell it. And therefore, if you are the best person to sell it, you are the person who should profit and will profit from it the most. Whereas with a publisher, one of the downsides I know authors who use traditional publishers feel is that the publisher will stop talking about them once the next season of books comes through. You are the best, like you're the best flavor of the holiday season, or you're the best, you're the next hot summer read. But then once their fall and winter titles come out, they actually have to pivot to now be able to talk about those titles, and it can feel really cold in the shadow because the sun's not there anymore. And it's still up to the author to now talk about it. Okay. So
you do, with the publishing house, you do get a little bit of some marketing support and a little, not as much as maybe one might think, but they are kind of like supporting and talking about you, I guess.
It depends on the size, because there's really every city, every state, every Canada, every province, there's always small presses that kind of have 3 to 5 people doing their jacks of all trades, and they are considered traditional publishers. And they also, I don't know how it works in the States, but a lot in Canada rely heavily on grant funding to stay alive and to be able to publish books. So when they say that they can't, this doesn't suit their roster right now, or they're not able to help publish it, they actually have to be fulfilling grant obligations for that publishing deal. So that's the title. That's the type of work that they're looking for. For example, if they're looking for people of color or like diverse voices, then those are the types of titles that the publishing house has to take. When it comes to the big guys like Simon Schuster, Penguin Random House, HarperCollins, those guys, they have big marketing machines. They're like a big cruise ship. They have a lot of access and a lot of ability to push books out. However, the way that the industry works is kind of like all industries. If a book is selling, they push it more. And if a book is not selling, you kind of are like, we got to move on, like next thing, because we can't, like, how long you can't just keep pushing money and keep trying new avenues. The big publishers, they're the ones that, honestly, if I had to like be as a very black and white advice giver on this, I would say if you got a publishing deal with one of the big ones, Simon Schuster, Penguin Random, HarperCollins, House of Anansi, if you got a deal with them, then I would go. I would take that publishing contract and work with them. Anything kind of like mid to low tier, that small house, I would like, the industry is moving too fast and people are so, and us as authors and entrepreneurs, we're so nimble. I would 100% self-publish, because the control and the access and the ability of an individual, the reach we can have is just as strong that as a small house. So that's a black and white answer. It's like, if you get a big deal, go for a big deal. And if it's anything shy of that, don't.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. You know, one thing that I found that I wasn't expecting when I wrote The Final Swipe was a lot of people say, like, sometimes as an entrepreneur, you write a book to be, what do they call it? A calling card or something. And I didn't really get what that meant. I wrote the book because it was like coming out of me and I had to write it. But what's interesting is that people were like taking me more seriously just because I had a book. Like, it was so funny. Like, I would get more podcast opportunities. So in that case, I was like, oh, this is such a good, especially for, I was talking about dating. Like, it really established me as a dating expert, which was interesting just by like putting out a book that nobody gave me permission to write but me. So I thought that was funny. Like, it's not like anybody was like, we crown Nikki a dating expert. I crowned myself a dating expert and wrote that book. I mean, obviously it had to be good and people liked it and all that kind of stuff, but it did give me opportunities to get that I wasn't getting before. So that was like super interesting. Soul-led living is, I was just talking to Megan before this, guys, and you have heard me talk about this on the podcast, that it is a product that I'm still figuring out. I'm not giving up on it, but I don't understand it yet. And Megan, of course, was like, I have like 17 ideas for you. So obviously this is meant to be. Soul-led living is a little different, where the niche is not so obvious. Like, the dating book was obviously like this very obvious niche. It gave me an expertise that I didn't expect. So I think, like, if you have some niche like that, that's a really good reason to self-publish, because you will get invited to, or not even get invited, but you will be able to like pitch yourself. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I was like, oh, thanks, guys. You think I'm like the real deal because I have a book out. Awesome.
And you know what? I can tell you that, like, authors who've had deals with HarperCollins and Penguin Random House, they're still like, get introduced to be on stages or on podcasts, and they get introduced and like, thank you for thinking I'm an expert. I just sat at my computer for 4 years and now you think I'm an expert. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's translate this to a different social term. So when somebody has their MBA or has a PhD in a subject, we now, like, all of a sudden we defer to them as somebody who must know more than we do. And then you have a conversation with them. Oh, they're just like I have a friend, for example, she had her PhD, and I'm like, I can't believe that you don't talk about this more often. Like, it's such a prestigious, like, three letters to have behind your name. And she's like, oh my God. She's like, it's just the biggest like poser thing ever. I just did it to make my parents happy. And she's like, all it took was like, I just had to stay in school for 2 more years. Like, she just was like, this is not a big deal. And that's, I think, how we feel as authors sometimes, when we're like, this is not a big deal, guys. But it is. Socially, being an author, there's a reason that not everybody gets introduced on podcasts and gets introduced on stages and in conferences as an author, is because not everybody has it in them to grind out writing a great book. It is a lot of work, like your master's or your PhD.
Yeah. I have a colleague, Sahara Rose. Many of you know her. She said something to me that, like, she has written several books. You know, she also mentors like up and coming spiritual teachers. And she's like, I like when people write a book because it's really something that not a lot of people can do. I mean, I think they can do it, but not a lot of people that actually like follow through. So she felt even, and she's had a lot of publishing, she's had all only publishing deals, and it has really been. And when she said that to me, I was like, oh gosh, like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, to actually sit down, dedicate a year, 2 years, whatever the amount of time it takes to write your book and get it out, not a lot of people are willing to like stick that out. Because I think what's interesting about book writing and soul-led living, I needed help, because now that we're coming from a world of social media, I can put up a story today and get like 20 people giving me a high five about that story. I'm getting feedback right away. It feels real good. Mm-hmm. But writing a book, you are like, holy crap. I have no idea if anybody is going to like this. Nobody's giving me positive reinforcement, like, other than your editor. And it's a scary product, because even, for instance, I do a lot of courses. I might do a course for teaching it live for 3 months, but guess what? Like, I am fixing that course the whole way through in live time. So I can make a really good product because I'm getting feedback like in live time. Where a book, I might be writing it alone for a whole year with no audience feedback. Of course, you're going to get like your editor feedback or whoever else you're showing it to. But that was hard with Soul-Led Living. I needed to write with my assistant, Kat, who is like a big consumer of the work that I do and the space that I'm in. And I needed her not so much as an editor, but as like a feedback giver, like, because she's such a reader and I needed her to read. I was writing with her the whole time because I needed that feedback, because writing could be very lonely.
Yeah, that's, I mean, just the fact that you observed that and knew that she could be such a, like an ally or a teammate in the process is like, I mean, Kat sounds amazing. I'd love every author to have a Kat. That would be great. But it is true. Like, there's kind of two things that you touched on about, one about social media. Like, it's really easy to, as you said, put things out and it can feel like, oh, I put, some posts take an hour. Like, if you're being a thoughtful, you want to tell like something really thoughtful, you edit it 5 times and now the post takes an hour. But again, you're getting feedback and now it lives there, but people also consume it almost as frivolously as like a scroll. You know, they're just like, oh, well, that was really nice. And then they move on. Whereas with a book, it's almost consumed proportionately to like the effort put in. Obviously not in time. It can take years to write a book. It shouldn't take years to read a book. But the time that you spend writing is also the time that you spend with a reader. Mm-hmm. And
yes,
I think when you have somebody like Kat on your team and you're able to, if you're able to hire like a company like ours, we are always trying to think about not only what is not just the book that somebody's going to buy and never read. What's the scroll? We're not trying to create an Instagram post ultimately. But as you said, like in a world where everyone is moving so quickly, like we are in constant competition for people's attention. So you do need to have people looking out for not only you, Nikki, as the author's best interest, but also in the best interest of your reader, because you don't need to overindulge and you want to just spend that time with people and you don't want to be like, hey, I'd love to spend like 14 hours with you. Please sit down and like, and because you'll tire people out. Somebody gave me Obama's book and I was like, did you want me to like stop my door with this? Like, I'm not going to read this. This is so huge. And it's a hardcover. I'll knock myself out if I read this while laying down. Like,
oh my God. I haven't seen it. But yeah, Kat was definitely the advocate for the reader. I feel like she'd be like, I don't understand this, Nikki. Or like, can you explain this better to me? Like, she really was like she was standing up for the reader while I was writing. And that was really helpful. So tell me, Megan, one thing that I also did not do super well, which I've heard this advice before and I didn't listen to it because of just the nature of where my business was, but I've heard a lot of authors who are simultaneously writing or even coming up with their book proposal as they are already promoting that body of work. So for example, let's say I'm going to come out with an intuition book, but I haven't even written that book, but I'm already thinking about the marketing strategy for an intuition book. And I even might be like teasing some of that already while I'm writing. So by the time the book comes out, I think you call it runway, I think is what you called it. I could be wrong, but because the worst is to come out with a book and crickets, you know, like nobody wants to write a book where there is nobody. We all want to write a book and have people show up to our book signing, which Megan, I don't know if I told you this, but I had my book launch event in Miami and I had a line outside the door. People were waiting for 2 hours to get book signed by me.
You did not tell me, and that did not make its way onto Instagram. So how was I supposed to find out?
I know. God, I'm like, I really need to be better at, you know, but I was so in shock by that. I was like kind of out of my body. I think that's also why I stopped promoting Soul Led Living, because I think it's been hard for me to like handle. I've been working so hard for so many years. And then when I got all that success, I would say, I didn't know this was a therapy session, guys, but yeah, I would say.
I was going to say, Nikki, I know somebody who would love to sit. Her name is Nikki and she tends to sit with people and help find out what their blocks are. And it sounds like yours might be success. So.
Okay, guys. So we can all keep me accountable. But I would say that, yeah, you were the one that talked a little bit about the marketing of the book even before the book comes out. So I was wondering, like, for anybody that maybe needs to, that has a book idea but doesn't have a platform yet, how can we kind of maybe do both at the same time? And what are some tips for maybe what I could be doing marketing wise?
Mm-hmm. I think there's strategy, but we don't need to overthink it. So for example, if somebody is just starting to workshop their idea and they're like, I think this is the next thing for me. I think I'm going to be ready within the month. I'd like to really dive into writing. if they want to start building readership and they want to be able to talk about their book, as you said, before it even exists, I think it would be, it's really useful to be very honest in sharing that news and not, you don't have, it doesn't have to be hyped. Like, guys, I'm writing a book, like, you know, sound like it'll be ready soon. You don't have to make any promises. I think if we arrive at a very transparent, like, caption, or however somebody wants to post, whatever platform they're posting on, might be, you could start your book marketing with something as simple as, this idea is not leaving me. I'm either chasing it or it's chasing me. And I'm saying it here. I would like to write a book and I'm going to start this coming month. And I'm told excitement is best shared, so I'm going to start sharing it. And you can just drip things like that as you are writing it. That's all I did. I didn't have an end goal. I just started sharing, because think about pregnancies. Think about people who are getting into shape, running marathons, or getting or building a business. We share all of our progress photos along the way because it's exciting. And a book is kind of no less. And I think if we use that the same way, like if I was pregnant right now, would I be posting my 3 month, 6 month, 9 month bumps? Then if you do that, then you're going to, it's the same for your book. If you're posting, you know, you're training for a Tough Mudder or Ironman or a marathon or a 10K, whatever the distance is, if you're training for that, you likely post about things like that. Had a great run today, or not all runs are going to be great. You're updating because it's something that people seem to like. We care about, if we follow people, we care about what they're doing in one, like to a certain degree. A book is the same thing. So that's how people can early stage start marketing their book without having the end product to sell. Because ultimately, I don't know about you, I really don't like selling. Always has felt really uncomfortable to me. So the only way I can shift that for myself and what we shift for our authors is, this is not selling your book. This is sharing your experience.
Totally.
So I don't know if that's helpful or not, but that's what I would suggest. You just share your experience.
And that, like, also kind of, you know, will build the platform ultimately so that people are also not surprised, you know. How did your book do well without, like, a platform like that?
There is an article called 1,000 True Fans. Yeah. And I'm sure you've heard of it. And if you haven't heard of it and you're listening to this, it is a 5-minute read. You can just Google it and it'll be available
Every
anywhere.
Entrepreneur needs to read that article. It's an old article, but it's very true.
And I think that's how I found success, is that I was not like you, and I was not the internet's favorite anything. So I was not the internet's favorite dating psychic. I was nothing. I was my family's favorite daughter, basically, was what I was. So, like, I probably had 1,000 collectively, maybe even 300 people who seemed to care when I posted, when I blogged. There was kind of a small, like, group of people that, like, felt my fire was worth staying close to. And then, but those people become, not only did they buy the book, but those people, when the book came out, became the people who were, you know, helping light other candles along the way. Like, I'm going to buy this for my friend. My sister-in-law needs to read this. And those people, because you've produced something that you promised that you would, which is a great book, those people help spread the word. And again, like 1,000 fans now become kind of 1,200 fans. And then you get on a radio, somebody invites you to be on a podcast. And now you collect 5 more fans from that. And those 5 fans really like your book, etc. And you can see how it can become exponential. But it's a perfect combination of having a professionally produced product, whatever that is in your business. Obviously, we're talking about books here. And the second is just making sure that people feel connected to you for real. Not this, like, you know, Beyonce audience level feeling where nobody really knows who you are. Rather, let's talk about everything that's going right and everything that's going wrong and everything that I'm scared about in this book. And voila, those people will help light the fire and light the path for you forwards.
I love that. That's so beautiful. And yes, it's a great article. Last question, because I feel you guys like asking this question. Outline tips. I know I guess it just makes us feel safe when we hear about, like, the nitty gritty. So, like, let's say I have an idea. How do I write an outline? Any thoughts?
Yes. Fiction or memoir is different. So I'll talk about both.
Okay.
I would say fiction and memoir end up, we want to flow people through highs and lows. So when you're writing your outline, I did this very grassroots on my living room floor. I had sticky notes and I basically wrote highs and lows and I placed them in like big life-changing events that I was always writing the smaller stories to get to a big life-changing event. And now you write smaller stories to get to the high, smaller stories to get to the low. So I wrote every sort of, I color-coded it, I think, and I wrote highs and lows that. As a, that's the direction I wanted to write into. So okay.
That's
visually, it was easier
turner,
to see it.
Also, like that's what, like,
I hope of, so. It avoids the and then memoir. And then this happened. And then this happened. So,
okay.
And you know, soul-led living had this in it. Like you had really big, like life-changing, big plot-turning events that you wrote little stories around that ultimately added context to how we got to those big life-changing things. I won't spoil anything for those of you who still haven't read it, and you guys can go buy it today. Now, if you're writing a business book or something that is more entrepreneurial and like business advice or spiritual advice, I feel like an outline there has to follow a certain, like we are growing with the reader. So introduction of concept, and it would be like pulling up a chair next to somebody who doesn't know anything about your subject matter. So you're going to pull up a chair, like first we got to talk about what this book is going to be and what you're going to learn from it. And the second thing is going to be some examples and how you can start implementing them. So that would be, I would kind of start, it would be like as if you were giving somebody a 3-hour session on all of the information you want to talk about. That's how you'd write the outline. In that first meeting, you have to explain yourself first. Then you have to talk about tools and then ultimately result and like goal,
and like what you feel like they need to know before. Like, I feel like I do that when teaching courses. It's like almost like what's the first level of information that you feel that they need to know in order to like get to the next level of information. So kind of having an idea of, you know, a child needs to go to kindergarten and learn to read before they can, you know, whatever, go to high school and learn to dissect literature or whatever.
Yes.
So I guess it's kind of a bit of more of a journey, a little bit more linear than that kind of memoir type of up and down. So I love that.
Yeah.
I also did, when I was trying to understand my ideas, I did two things. I sometimes do index cards where I just like write an idea on an index card and have a bunch of them. And then I kind of like your sticky notes and just kind of lay them out so I can understand what is coming through me. Or even doing, I forget what they're called, like a mind map. So again, let's say I'm writing soul-led living. I would write soul-led living in the middle of the paper, circle it, and then write all these arms off of it and be like, oh, mm-hmm. When we moved to North Carolina, you know, don't forget to talk about destiny, or don't, like, just all these things I'd love to cover in the book, but it's all like messy in my head. I usually like drop it on the paper and then from there kind of start to separate them into more of an outline form.
Yeah.
And I would say
such good advice.
I didn't follow my outlines very well. Very well either. I don't know if that's the experience with some authors, but I feel like once I'm writing, the outline does change a bit. It's a little different than what I thought it was going
to
be.
Totally. It's allowed to. I think the very first thing that if anyone is listening to this conversation and they start to feel inspired and like, I think it's time. The very first thing that anyone needs to do is do what you just did, is like stop walking around with your book in your head and put it on a page and just do that exercise seriously, because that is the first, like if it's out of your head, it starts to become real. Because otherwise we're just walking around with like, oh, I guess I could talk about that. And then I wouldn't want to forget about that. But as we all know that the research is there, that when you write something down, there is way more power and way more effectiveness to it than if we just walk around it within our heads. The same will apply for starting your book. And what you've just done, Nikki, is perfect, right? Because even though those stories might have not been in your book, they needed out of your head. So they stopped taking up space. So you could now like add something else in there to create.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like a piece, it's like artwork. Like if you're, you know, like really when you start that outline, it is a reflection of what's already within you, the same way that I might be like, I have this emotion and I want to draw, you know, a piece of art from it. It is that eventually that piece of art is like a reflection of something that's like in me. You're really like, you know, getting it out of you for sure. So I think that's interesting.
And you know, those are all the things that, like, when we're wondering how am I going to talk about my book, those are all things that you just take a picture of me and then throw it on Instagram, or that's what you take a picture of and throw it on TikTok or whatever you got. It's all part of that's the first like baby bump picture that you post is when you like do an outline.
Your sonogram.
I'm going to go for it. Yeah, exactly.
Or some people that really go there and they do the picture of your pregnancy test. That was like, wow, you're really going there. You're showing me the pregnancy test. Like we're getting that intimate.
Let's bring.
I just saw something you peed on.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is ground zero, guys. We're really going to be following here.
Exactly. I can still see your pee on the pregnancy test.
Yeah.
And then after outline, is it just like get your butt on that chair and start writing?
I think so. And I think eventually if you're trying to run 10K or 6 miles, eventually you have to start the run. So write the outline. And then in terms of the actual writing though, just open a Word document and start with the first thing that you want to say. That's all. And my only advice that every time I hear somebody not use it, it drives me nuts because I know how much time they're wasting, is do not edit as you go. Just write. Because if you write all the way through to the very end, then you will have wasted no time. Everything that was in your body and your head got purged onto the page. And now you have the first draft of your manuscript. No one will ever see it. No one ever has to touch it. But if you decide that you're going to be like, okay, I'm going to write a chapter and then I'm going to go back to it tomorrow morning and I'm going to edit this. The thing is then you're just taking one step forward, one step back, and you're never really getting, the movement doesn't happen that way. So I just run straight. And then like if you slow down, then walk, but just stop, don't stop the movement forward ultimately.
And then after that is when you visit Benny, my husband, by the way, used to call that the delete button. He's like, he would watch me write. He'd be like, Nikki, you're writing with the delete button today. And I was like, F you. Like, you don't know what it's like to write. So please stop. Yeah. But he would tell me, I would sit there.
You
and
don't
I would
know.
Go, delete,
stop
delete,
dropping
delete.
Your truth bombs on me.
Yeah. He'd be like, oh, there's Nikki. Delete, 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 delete. It's so annoying. So after I write the manuscript, is that around the time I'm looking for an editor?
Yep. I would say that first purge draft will probably require you to go back. You don't want anybody to really see that yet, unless you're so freaking sick of your own story and your own voice.
Okay.
Honestly, it'll just cost more. You could hand over that first terrible manuscript if you wanted to an editor, but it's going to cost a lot more money. Yeah. If you hand over a shitty first draft, an editor is going to be like, oh, they gave me their shitty first draft. So obviously, you've got a lot of money to give me to work through this. Because when you go back and I'd write the first draft of the manuscript, then go on holiday or do not even think about looking at it for a couple of weeks. Now you go back and you read it and you're like, I think I said that already. Or that didn't really make sense. Or I wonder what I was trying to get at there. And when you feel that, you just delete it. You basically start just pruning. Okay, you can call it slimming it, but ultimately the purge is now done. So now we're seeing it a bit more clearly. We have fresh eyes now because, well, that's what we've created. We've dumped it and now we get to like sift through it and figure out, or we're going to say, that was really awesome. Loved what I said there. Or I might want to add something because now my brain sees it differently. After that second round or third round of doing that for ourselves, that would be like, that's the most cost-effective time to bring in an editor.
Okay. Makes sense. I do know that like I'll tend to like have conversations before I start writing with an editor, like just to like after the outline, I'll usually talk to an editor and be like, this is what I got. And just kind of talk it out a little bit. Then I don't see her. Then I start writing, do like 2-3 kind of edits, and then go back to an editor. So that makes sense. I was doing that intuitively, but yeah, I guess it could be so expensive if you're just giving the shitty first draft because it takes a while to get to something good.
Yeah. And I have this like whole thought on why this is a bit of a departure, but you'll understand where I'm going with it. I believe this is also why AI will not take over a true author and their writing. Because if we want to just write a shitty first draft, then you can go on ChatGPT and do that. But you earn your author title. And what you're talking about is like when you go back and you revise that shitty first draft and then you do it again and then you listen to what an editor has to say and then you revise again, you are earning that title. You're earning your master's. You're earning your PhD. You didn't just like – it just can't be given to you. So I have this whole thing is like that's why AI – it will work for some people, but those aren't the people who are going to be having like a 2-hour wait around the block to go and see them because the book is going to be like, I think the author will only know that they cheated.
The way that I explain that is like the way that I love that. And I think the way that it feels for me as a writer is that the editing process is like it's like kind of going to the gym and being like, okay, I'm going to do 8 reps of this, you know, whatever this weight. But I actually know that if I do 14, I'll be exhausted. And I feel like when I first write, I'm like, okay, I did the baseline. Like I gave you, you know, what's within me. But when I edit the second, the third time, maybe the fourth time, I'm like, I have left it. This is the best that I can do. And I did feel like that at the end of Soul Led Living. Like I was like, this is all I got. Like this is what I got right now. I'm sure one day there will be more within me, but I wanted to get to like the depths of like what was available to me. And I think what was within me. And I think you can only get there with a lot of edits. So it is an exhausting feeling, but it's really that you're getting deeper into what is within you is what it feels like as an author.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly. And then therefore, when people introduce you as an author and we go back to feeling like it's a calling card, that's why not everybody has a best-selling book. And that is not why everybody even can be called an author, is because that is the work that is required.
Right. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's Nikki, beautiful. Feel so proud. You've done such great work.
Thank you. That's what I brought Megan on for, you guys, just to like, so she can make me feel better about myself. But no, I loved, like, I hope that we all, there's so much good stuff here, and I'm looking forward to all of you becoming that author that's within you and that you're worthy of it and you're deserving of it. And you just got to go like swim in the water and start doing it. So this was really helpful, Megan. So how could we work with the self-publishing agency if we wanted to?
I mean, if somebody's interested, then all they have to do, we kept it really simple. It's a really unsexy business name, the self-publishing agency. We did it just for SEO purposes. And it works. So we're the self-publishing agency everywhere on the internet. So should be easy enough to find. And then you can direct message us all over the internet as well. And, you know, if you're curious and just, you can always book a call with me and we can have a chat and to see if you're in that ready stage or if you're just, you know, playing around with the idea, you can never hesitate to book a call about that. And then if you want to be a bit more passive about it, at least just go on Instagram and find us at the self-publishing agency and get a feel for the type of authors that we work with and the variety that we work with them. And I don't know, you'll just meet some really interesting people along the way. Like, yeah, Nikki.
I love it. Of course, we will link to everything, guys, here in the show notes. So it will make it easy for you. But it's, yes, the selfpublishingagency.com. And I highly recommend. I mean, I don't know if I could write a book without you guys. So I appreciate
you for coming
on the show. Love you much. Thank you for being here. Thanks, guys, for listening.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. I love you guys so much. If you have a sec, I would so appreciate it if you would leave me a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Those reviews are so helpful. And if you're ready to start living your soul-led life, pick up my latest book, Soul-Led Living, available on Amazon. Until next time, love you much.